from the Two Buffalo Studios in Bradenton, Florida, welcome to Indigenous in the News. I'm your host, Larry Kay, from the Ho-Chunk Nation, along with Gary Wilcox from the Powhatan Nation. Today, we're honored to welcome Manuel Zavala, a dedicated educator and the founder of Student Hires, a program that connects local college students with K-12 schools to lead after-school career readiness initiatives. His work is focused on creating opportunities for youth, especially in underserved communities, providing hands-on learning experiences that inspire future leaders. We're excited to hear about the impact he's making. Indigenous in the News starts now. I'm Larry Kay, and joining me today from our Miami studios is my co-host, Gary Wilcox. And how are you today, Gary?
Hey, I'm doing great, Larry. How are you? A little rainy today, but we're doing just fine.
Right on.
Today, we're talking with Emmanuel Zavala. He's the founder of Student Hires. Let's welcome Manuel Zavala. Hello, Manuel.
What's up, Gary?
How you doing, man? How you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks for being patient with getting the schedule and everything. I know we had an original scheduled date, and then I ended up having to go out to a meeting.
No worries. So, let's get started. Manuel, can you tell us a little about your journey into the education and what inspired you to start Student Hires?
Sure. So, my name is Manuel Zavala. I'm the founder of Student Hires. Originally started, I like to say, when I was dropping out of university. Started with the simple recognition that every single student needs an entry-level opportunity that will compound into more and more opportunities.
Mm-hmm. What came first, educator or entrepreneur? And what was the moment that sparked your passion for youth empowerment and experimental learning?
It's a combination for sure. I mean, education starts at the earliest possible age, right? If I were to go as far back as possible, maybe it was kindergarten where my mom's drilling me to get my multiplication problems done. If I'm thinking on the entrepreneurship side, I mean, I could remember specific instances in elementary, middle, and high school where my dad is showing me some of the basics of entrepreneurship through what he's doing. So I always bring it back to all that stuff is kind of meshed into one another. But for me, it really started from that entrepreneurship side, I'd say, for the most part, because when I was younger, around high school age, and right after high school, I started contracting personally via 1099 with a lot of different business owners. So I had met business owners that were no different than ourselves, starting their own ventures, some of them a little farther along than others, that kind of showed me the ropes of what that stuff looked like. And it didn't all quite hit at the time. I mean, of course, during that age, you're not completely, I'd say, conscious towards all those moving pieces. But as they continue to accumulate over 5-10 years, that's really when it starts kicking in. And then you look back and then you're like, wow, they did teach me a lot.
Mm-hmm. What gave you the thought of starting a school? What was actually the seed that you said, hey, I'm going to start Student Hires?
That seed started again when I was dropping out of college. So I had started as a computer engineer at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo in California. Uh-huh. That's where I'm based now in Southern California. So right upon leaving high school, I remember fondly talking with my English teacher, and I was asking him, like, what should I do? Like, I like graphic design. I was studying logos at the time in art class. I was kind of doing all my own research on my own. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff that I was passionate about learning wasn't happening in the school site. So I ended up going the computer engineering route because he was ultimately saying that teachers weren't going to make any money.
Okay.
He was of the belief, hey, follow your passion. But at the same time, I was battling with should I go for something that is a little more lucrative and what's the future horizon going to look like? And as you guys know, I mean, computer engineering, computer science, all this stuff is even blowing up now, right, with the adoption of AI. But for me, going that computer engineering route, I noticed when I was at Cal Poly that I didn't want to code all day. And that's what a lot of my coursework consisted of. It was sitting at a computer, and it was doing a lot of programming work across a variety of languages, where we started with the C language. And we would jump between Java, start learning all these other ones, C#. And at some point, I grew dissatisfied, I guess, with the school that I was attending. And ultimately what I was spending a lot of my time doing. And then I found passion. Specifically, I remember when I was sitting in my dorm apartment and my father had reached out to me, sending me a text saying, hey son, I know you're a computer nerd. Can you build me a website? And truth be told, I didn't know how to build a website at the time. Maybe I had a tiny bit of experience from personal explorations in high school, but I just said, okay, I'll do it. And obviously, being a computer nerd, I did the research, figured out how to do it, figured out how to get a live shop up and running while I was in that first year of college. And that was probably the most passion that I found than what I was actually studying in the classroom. And that was happening, obviously, simultaneously. But at the same time, my grades were slipping, so I was dropping out of school. So that was a component whereby when I started to look around, I noticed that all my peers were looking for opportunities. They would say, hey, it's hard to get a specific opportunity in whatever field it might be, such as computer engineering. Hey, maybe they want to program for a company. And ultimately, that just came back to their experience, maybe their lack of quality skills demonstrated on their resume. Maybe it's just an overall lack of knowledge. So I looked around and said, well, who are the organizations that are supporting this effort? Are there any organizations supporting this effort? And could that be a concept that maybe could be pursued? And at the time, it wasn't originally called Student Hires. What I ended up doing was turning my own passion for creative work into what was called a student-led creative agency. And it was originally housed on the domain overpower.io. And I remember showing my dad a business card of Overpower and had like a fist on it, if you could think of like a gaming type of logo, because that's obviously what I was into, given that nature. And honestly, he kind of laughed at it. He was like, this is kind of childish, right? He probably wasn't expecting something of that nature to be steering towards that gaming direction. But what that did was it was setting the foundation to have that business card designed to set up that sole proprietorship under Overpower as a student-led creative agency to then start pitching that to business owners and on the back end having students facilitate that work. Students who ultimately needed a chance and just some work experience.
Nice, nice. What is the mission behind Student Hires and how does it serve Indigenous and underserved communities?
Student Hires was originally conceived to create valuable job opportunities for students. It's in our tagline throughout our web assets, graphic assets, everything, creating valuable job opportunities for students. Ultimately, the main question there should be, what is considered valuable? And mm-hmm. for students and to get an opportunity, we have to ensure it is a valuable opportunity, not something that is wasted. And the most common example I can think of is whenever anyone thinks of an intern, some college age or high school age student that is coming into an organization, they think of someone who's making the coffee. So for us, it's how do we integrate that student to the greatest extent possible so that they're learning the ins and outs of what it looks like to run a business and that they are feeling like they're growing in all areas in which they want to grow, whether mm-hmm. that be graphic design, whether that be social media content development, whether it be education, as we're heavily involved in the educational field as well.
Mm-hmm. How do you select and train college students to lead your programs?
A combination. Number one is Indeed has been a tremendous platform, to be honest. You know, a typical job platform like Indeed, Handshake is one that is integrated into a lot of the university systems. So we're often posting our job opportunities on Handshake as well.
I like it.
But even anytime we toss up a job opportunity on Indeed, I mean, we're getting hundreds and hundreds of applications.
Nice.
I don't doubt the same is true for other business owners and businesses that are posting. But the truth is, I think people need work right now. And if we think about our college age and our high school youth, sometimes these students are caring for their entire families or they're put the burden of responsibility to go and raise some money. So they're equally looking for some of those same job opportunities that our older population is looking for. So for me, posting on those platforms obviously gets an immediate reach to be able to get outreach. But really where Student Hires, I think, serves as a bridge to the university system, and it's even conceived in our logo. Hopefully you can see it here a bit. This ultimately signifies that what that bridge looks like. It's an intention to create a direct bridge from the university system, not only to the K-12 system, but also to the broader business community. So you could imagine what that means in terms of connecting, not even necessarily within our own organization, but with other organizations that exist within what we call the Opportunity Network.
Nice, nice.
In what ways has Student Hires helped bridge the gap between school and careers for Indigenous youth?
So the Indigenous youth side, I think when we had originally met, I discussed that we actually have not committed yet to serving Indigenous youth.
Okay.
In this case, we do have an initiative up where we are looking to better serve Indigenous youth because I am Indigenous myself. Mm-hmm. I'm a member of the Sleta Osor Pueblo out of El Paso, Texas. So it's definitely one of our focus areas. We have since, over the past, I'd say 2 years, been joining Native communities, meeting with some of the tribes, and continuing to transpire this conversation across multiple focus areas, usually stemming to cybersecurity and new and emerging technologies. For us, bridging that gap has been Number one, connecting with the university system to target some of their Native American youth and provide them specifically with job opportunities within our after-school programs, but at the same time connecting with organizations like the American Indian Chamber of Commerce, where we actually just recently found out that we will have the opportunity to lead a student body of theirs during the Youth Expo that they're having this coming July. So we're getting started in that realm, I'd say, and we continue to have other conversations that are transpiring again to help develop IT pipelines specifically for the Native American tribes. And we are more than willing to continue engaging to whatever capacity they feel that we could benefit them. I could tell you from our engagement with school districts, my number one fear ultimately comes back to this, though. How can we continue to scale our organization appropriately so that when that time comes that we're ready to take on all the work that is required of us? Because simultaneously, the school districts are increasing what they're expecting of us in terms of additional contracts, more responsibilities, and ultimately going back to that mission. When you connect students with job opportunities, it encompasses a lot of different areas. While we own afterschool.org as our primary after-school program initiative, after-school programming isn't the only thing that we do.
Well, you're doing a good job. I want to congratulate you. Salute. Yeah.
Thank you, Larry.
How can you ensure that your program is culturally responsive and relevant for Indigenous students? I know you're just getting into the realm with the chamber, so you'll be learning a lot of this as you move forward.
100%. I think 9 times out of 10, at least at the base for us, is always going to be hiring within the community that we're serving. So as we're hiring college students, if it is to specifically service a Native American tribe, moving forward, these projects will actually incorporate a specific percentage of hires that are directly coming out of that tribe or local college that has those students.
Sure.
So that always has the resonance, I think, piece handled. But the other part is that within all of our programs, we focus on foundational skill development that I believe transcends all cultures. When we think about what we need for students, youth, and families, I would like to say that if I asked you, Larry, if I asked Gary what he wants for his family, and if you guys asked me as well, we'd probably somehow end up on the same thing, regardless of our cultural backgrounds.
Sure.
So that's where we stay focused, but obviously keeping in mind that we do want to hire as much as possible from that community that we're serving. And some of it goes into sustainability planning, right? Really thinking out how do we keep this pipeline going, as we kind of discussed a bit earlier in relation to AIM, for ultimately just making sure the work stays moving forward independent of myself or one single member of our team.
Mm-hmm.
So have you partnered with any educators in particular, and have those collaborated? What do those collaborations look like?
On the education side, again, a lot of our collaboration stems in the university space. We have a current partnership with the UCR College of Education, whereby not only do they send us interns on a yearly basis, but are continuing to expand what they are expecting of us and continue to transpire conversations about how we can better service K-12 districts around the School of Education. So there's UCR, there's other colleges within our network that look to us to not only place their students within our programs, but we're also to engage on the apprenticeship realm. So with the expansion of apprenticeships, a recognition of the trades, and a focus on honestly work-based learning, we have continued to optimize our approach and our efforts to partner with these schools to better support apprentice placement as well. So that involves not only educators within those school sites that we are working with to make some of that happen and provide layers of continuing education, but also businesses on the back end.
Today, our guest is Manuel Zavala, a dedicated educator and the founder of Student Hires, a program that connects local college students with K-12 schools to lead to after-school and career initiatives. His work is focused on creating opportunities for youth. To learn more, contact Manuel directly at manuel@studenthires.com or visit them on the web at studenthires.com. What role does mentorship play in your model, especially in your local community?
For us, mentorship is everything. Mm-hmm. It goes back to what I was explaining a bit earlier. Mentorship is what is going to accelerate, I believe, all human development faster than imaginable. Even the short amount of time that I've known you, Larry, you know, learning about some of your ventures and how you continue to build your presence and, mm-hmm. and your network of influence, that is an educational experience for me. And that's a mentorship experience that occurs even if it's not on a consistent basis. So for us, and when we think about even the college system, I always think towards what is the fastest way to truly educate an individual? Mm-hmm. To me, it is getting them next to Larry, getting them next to Gary, getting them to Manuel after, right getting on. Them next to this CEO over here, yeah. and then bouncing them between a network of mentors. So for us, as we continue to refine what the opportunity network is, we are attempting to create seamless interactions like that on Good. A consistent basis. And we've started to develop a platform specifically for this. I can't go into too much depth yet on that, but it is in the works amongst many other projects to help facilitate mentorship interactions between students and communities ultimately.
Right on. I wanted to hear that. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. In educational development, how do you measure program success both academically and personally with your students?
Oh man, this one's always an interesting one for me. Hopefully you guys could tell I'm a pretty transparent person. I will say this, number one, I think there's a massive overemphasis on data right now. I think the whole world talks about data left and right. We need data that says that they grew. We need data that says this. Yes. It can help in some case scenarios, but let's be transparent. So much data is manipulated at this point in time, and we're in one of the most crucial stages where data is being shown to be manipulated, and yet we're still always asking for the data, as if the data can't be manipulated to then show whichever direction that we want it to show in the first place. Mm-hmm. And it even comes back to maybe our medical institutions that only show us a piece of the data that suggests one specific thing, or it might come back to our educational institutions that say that our students are learning when they're really not. So for us, the most foundational piece of data that at least I'm focused on when it comes to student hires and afterschool.org is what are those personal anecdotes that are not only coming out of our students, but what are visually observing in the changes of our students. Because if I have one individual in my after school program amongst a group of students that is sitting off into the corner by themselves, and they come in every day, and they're like me when I was in high school, didn't want to engage with anyone. The teacher is saying, why is this kid sleeping in the class? He's not saying, hey, Manuel, come get engaged in the class. He's saying, stop sleeping in class. For me to see the outcome in that change, what do you think it would look like? It would be that kid is now engaging by the end of the class. That kid is the one providing some of the responses over the other kids that were originally engaging the most. And that isn't something that you have like a data point to say, oh, that was some data that was taken in a survey that justified that this happened to the student. That's a personal anecdote. That's something mm-hmm. that we saw presently that potentially transformed the entire vision of what that kid even thought he was capable of achieving because he was willing to partake and felt that he could partake in that classroom environment. So data is a component. There's data requirements for all of our programs. Keep in mind, we have even midway surveys as we're doing some of the more extended programs and post surveys that highlight some of those personal anecdotes in addition to more things like Likert scales where you're just saying, hey, very mm-hmm. satisfied, not satisfied at all, that type of thing across a range of categories. Usually those are about 30 question surveys facilitated either by the parent or in conjunction with the student and the parent. But even that, there's layers to that data story, right? And keep in mind, that's a common request out of schools. What is the data and what is the measurement ability to ultimately justify the impact of your programs?
What are your hopes for the future of education and career readiness?
Oh man, I think they're coming to life, Larry. And you guys probably see it as well. I think the future of education is coming full steam ahead.
Yes.
We have long had an over-reliance upon, here's the way that education is supposed to be. And I'll say it even in my own family. I wonder what sparked in my parents' mind to say that college was the route to go. To say that my parents' names are Gloria and Miguel. Gloria and Miguel, who taught them that college was the thing that is going to most quickly provide the growth that you are perceiving in yourself and in your children? My dad was someone who didn't even have a significant amount of education, at least on paper, right? He had more of the street smarts, but someone told them, because they told me, that I need to go to college. And I just go back to what we said before, Larry. Would it have been wiser to put me around a network of 10 CEO mentors that probably would have taught me everything and more and gave me more real life experience than the college classroom? And keep in mind, we support the college system, and I've created a solution that supports the college system because of that perspective. The truth is that we have over-relied, I think, on our educational institutions. We know they have way too much capacity that they can handle. Simultaneously, they have an overwhelming amount of funding to handle it. The question is, where is that funding going and how efficient is it being utilized to truly address the problems and the things that our students need? Mm-hmm. So for the future of education, and as we continue to devise what is studenthiresandafterschool.org, it's an integration into this system to ultimately expand the value that schools and colleges can provide, not only in the classroom, but via work-based learning opportunities. And the nation continues to move in that direction. You could see it even as Trump is talking about, I want more money to go to trade schools. Why does he want more money to go to trade schools? Because the whole nation is wondering, what is the true value that our students are getting out of the college system when our family members can't even get a job post-degree?
Right.
So is the only intention or the only outcome that we're anticipating from college to get a job? What is the outcome that we're intending? From my understanding, it's just to allow a student or an individual to develop. Okay, well then I go back. What is the fastest mechanism to get the student to develop? I think there is an argument to be made that the fastest way to develop is going to be to pair them with mentorship experiences, as you said, and to connect them with work-based learning experiences. So when Trump is saying, hey, give more money to the trade schools, it's because those trade schools are teaching them how to work and integrating them into the workplace at the soonest age possible.
Yep.
And for us, studenthiresandafterschool.org, we're attempting to do that as early as transitional kindergarten, which is 4 years old. We can start to steer our youth in the direction that we're anticipating them to be. If I want my kid to be a CEO, what am I going to do? Am I going to wait until 18 years old to get him to learn about this stuff? Or am I going to take him to the CEO meeting as Elon Musk is taking little X on the back of his head into the Oval Office to expose him to all those things? Sure, he's not going to do perfect. Sure, he's not going to know everything he's doing. He might not even understand it. But all of those accumulated experiences, that's the future of education in my mind. That's a refinement towards, let's let the community in. Let's let Larry in. Let's let Gary in. Let's let Manuel in. Let's let these students connect with one another. And let's find ways that we can accelerate their development together.
Awesome.
How can schools, tribal communities, or organizations partner with Student Hires?
In a number of ways. Schools can all go to afterschool.org. They could refer their school directly to us just by entering the form in the box. Really, it starts from starting a conversation. We are looking for people who resonate with what I've discussed today. If you resonate with any piece of what I discussed, if you see some of the flaws in our educational system, if you see your students disengaged on a school site, we're wondering why Native communities are having the issues that they're having. We're wondering how we can set up leadership cycles so our youth can step into these leadership positions. Mm-hmm. I believe the key lies in programs like the ones that we provide, and I believe there's tremendous untapped potential when it comes to after-school programs. The benefit of getting in contact with us is obviously that we could have a conversation about what the most efficient after-school program looks like for your institution, because at the end of the day, maybe it does look like this. None of the educational right. institutions are talking about crypto, there will be a time maybe in the coming years once regulation shows that they'll say, oh, now it's time to start talking about crypto regulation. But in the meantime, we're still told about the old financial system. So there's things like that where we can perceive the future and we can say, here are some of the things that maybe we should focus on. Then there's other of the more foundational things like, hey, we have a Native American tribe with a casino that's generating $20 million, $100 million, $2 billion in revenue over the next couple years. How do we ensure that there are succession plans set in place so that our students are prepared to take on some of these roles? Yes. So there are layers and layers of that across every single organization. But as we discussed earlier, Larry, Gary, everything comes to succession planning. Mm-hmm. How we propel our youth is going to determine what our future looks like ultimately. And the better we do a job of that, the future could look better than what we imagined.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Salute.
And finally, what message would you like to share with young Indigenous students who are dreaming big but may not know where to start or how to get in hold of you?
This is, you know, I was pretty blessed. I grew up with a computer, and sometimes people put that in perspective for me that not everyone grows up with a computer. Mm-hmm. So maybe we're here telling them, go to afterschool.org, and then they go, they don't even have a way to get to afterschool.org. But I will say this, our youth are being consumed by social media right now. So if there was any recommendation I could give, get the hell off of social media. Get off of social media, because me, Gary, Larry, and all these other people in the world that are counting on you are waiting for you to reach out to us. Mm-hmm. So I'm giving you ways to reach me here. Even if you just find any way to reach me, I can even guarantee that you could probably walk to the library and access a computer if you don't have one. So there's a level of sacrifice that needs to be made to truly make these visions happen. But the truth is, we're all waiting on for you to make that sacrifice.
Yes.
So put it to the side, engage with what's going on around you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Manuel, can you let our listeners know how to get a hold of you, your website?
If you want to reach me directly, honestly, my information is available on my own website, myfullname.com, Manuel Zavala. On the student hire side, if you want to learn more about our hub body organization, which is student hires, studenthires.com. If you want to learn more about our after school programs or even refer a school site directly, you could just go to afterschool.org.
Nice, nice. Well, thank you, Manuel, for stopping by today, and congratulations on all your great work you're doing for the youth of America, and keep us posted on any future developments.
Yeah, thank you very much, Manuel. It was great. We learned a lot about your business, and I'm really, really thrilled, and I'm glad that you're helping the youth out there today. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, Gary and Larry.
Yeah. Thank you for tuning in to Indigenous in the News and supporting us and our entrepreneurs. Indigenous in the News has been produced by Larry Kay. Our engineer is Paul Salvatore. Our theme music is composed by Lenny Long. Today's show has been recorded at the Two Buffalo Studios in Bradenton, Florida. Come visit us at indigenousinthenews.org to hear all of our past shows and learn all about the great programs that we provide at our nonprofit. Until next time, from all of us here at Indigenous in the News, have yourself a great week and safe journeys. Music today was from Martha Redbone, entitled Children of Love. Indigenous in the News is a production of Indigenous in Music and Arts.